against dolphins, dude. That was really harsh. Flipper's freaking adorable.
Yeah, he hates them on purpose.
that was the worst joke ever. I love it.
This is Bad Voltage, or at least this is three quarters of Bad Voltage for this, our 55th show. Mr. Joby Garcia is off serving the forces of truth, justice, and the American way.
he's got jury duty.
Well, that's nearly the same thing as being Superman, right? It's the same kind of mental vibe going
though, on. We should point out that, so he's off on jury duty, poor Jeremy, but it looks like he wasn't actually selected, so he accomplished nothing today. So, good on you, Jeremy. Congratulations, buddy.
Just another day.
Yeah, just another day.
He has nonetheless given of his free time to help the rule of law, which is no bad thing, except for when the rule of law is attempting to see what's on your cell phone, which we'll find out about later.
We will find out about that later. And we're also going to be talking about whether or not begging is the new economy. This is all based off of an article that Jono happened to read because Jono wanted to remind us all that sometimes he reads articles.
I do sometimes read articles. And there was another article that I believe Mr. Langridge read, and we're going to talk about that as well, which is going to be about Apple versus the American government's Department of Justice. We're going to get into what this fight is and what we think about it.
And I've got a new phone, the OnePlus X, and I quite like
it. Do you love it?
I quite like it, yes. I am quite a fan of my delightful new phone. And so I shall review it and then be mocked by the Bad Voltage.
This is the first episode of Bad Voltage that's going to be rated X for obscene, given the level of love that he has for this thing. It's
hardcore.
Frankly, it's disgusting.
It's very hardcore. We're talking like 1970s unshaved hardcore here.
This review can be found in your dad's sock drawer. Anyway.
Okay, guys. So what do we do now? Because Jeremy is not here to say his stuff. Do we do it differently? Does someone say his thing? What do we do?
Let's break it down word by word, all right?
Well, there's four words.
Well, let's just figure out. And
now.
Shit.
we can't even do this.
Voltage.
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 The voltage.
This is the best show ever already.
There's an interesting article recently in the New York Times.
I disagree about that immediately, right off the bat. I don't believe that that's probably true.
Thank you, Brian.
You're welcome.
Anyway, there was an interesting article about GoFundMe, and this whole topic basically got into the notion of whether begging is a new economy. So there's various things. There's GoFundMe, which is one way of basically saying, you know, I need help for medical bills, or it could even be I want to go to a particular event, or I need to buy books for school or whatever. And then there's also various other projects. People have tried crowdfunding to pay for their things. And then you've got things like Patreon is a way in which every YouTuber on the planet seems to be using Patreon to raise money. So this begs the question, pun intended, is begging the new way in which we are, in which the world is working? And is this psychologically necessarily a good thing?
Okay. We need to separate things out a little bit here. There is begging, which is what GoFundMe is. GoFundMe is where I really want a golden toilet. So you go post a thing on GoFundMe that says, everyone please pay for my goddamn Japanese golden toilet. Then there is things like Patreon, which is literally old school, which is more like the olden days when artists were usually funded by patrons. And then the works they created were then free after that. That's the old way of doing things. I mean, like most of human history, artists were funded by patrons to paint the Sistine Chapel or write a play or a sonnet or something like that. And then that work is usually then public domain or owned by the patron to give to the masses. That's usually how things worked right. until recently. So those sorts of, so Patreon is more of a throwback to ye olden times, which I'm sure you British guys would like to have happen. So that's a little bit different.
Well, that's just ye current times in England.
Oh, okay. is that what ye is? I wasn't quite sure what the specifics
were. Ye times.
Yes, you're right. It's ye current times in England. On the other hand, there aren't that many people here who are having to beg on a website for enough money to pay their medical bills because we have a sensible healthcare system.
That's a friggin' fair point.
That's a very fair and accurate topic.
We could have another time, but I'm pretty sure all of us would just acquiesce and say that's a pretty fucking good point.
So we'll have less mockery of England, Baconio. So just because you fled doesn't mean the rest of us need to.
So let's put like the Patreon thing off to the side for a minute, because I really feel like that's a totally separate discussion. It's interesting, it's viable, but it's not begging. It's a different sort of thing.
Well, hang on a second. It depends. The tool, there's two different things here, right? There's the tool that you use to gather the money, and then there is the approach in which you use to gather the money.
Oh, that's a good point.
So, like, I mean, the tool in some ways is kind of insignificant. It's, you know, whether you're using just PayPal or whether you're using something else. I think what this maybe gets into a little bit is this notion of... The people basically pleading for cash.
Well, hang on, right? If there's a real world analogy here, which might clarify something, I think. If you're walking along the street and a guy comes up to you and says, "Have you got 10 pence for a cup of tea?" That's begging. If there's a guy standing on the corner playing a guitar with a hat out in front of
him,
I'd call him a busker. Not a beggar. If you think that he's begging as well, because that's what Patreon or Kickstarter is, you're offering something in exchange for money. Begging is offering nothing and just asking for money because you need
it. That's a good point.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So basically, the begging difference. So I guess if begging is that definition, so buskers are not beggars, then I do not think begging is the new economy. It does feel slightly like the article, which we'll link to in the show notes if I remember. Is trying to bundle the whole of Patreon and Kickstarter and Indiegogo and GoFundMe and just giving all into one great big pile of people give money on the internet without just purchasing a product.
And to be fair, like I don't actually think begging is the new economy.
Beveridge's law says if a headline asks a question, the answer is always no. Always. Right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Never known it go wrong so far. So the headline asks the question, is begging the new economy? Answer is no, because of the law.
Also you got it wrong.
It's a good thing I didn't read the article, because all I needed to know was that. So perfect.
Well, to be fair, the article headline is not is begging the new economy. The article title is GoFundMe Gone Wild.
Yes.
Which is way better.
okay, so that is a little different.
And also, you had it wrong. It's not Beveridge's Law. It's actually a store called Beveridges and More. Okay, that's the anyway.
It's more precisely BevMo. Yes. So I think Stuart actually kind of got this right. This really is segmented out into a few things. So Patreon. So like I'm doing Patreon right now, and it really is more like busking. It's like I'm the guy on the street corner with an accordion in my arms, but some cymbals between my feet, and I'm playing a ridiculous song with a hat out on the street. It is more like that. And GoFundMe is more like, please give me some cash. And then there's Kickstarter and Indiegogo and everything else, which are, please give my company money so that we can not go to venture capitalists or investors or whatnot, and let's crowdsource the investor portion of producing this product. Well, which is a different thing, really. I mean, it's like the Mystery Science Theater thing, right? So we're all following Joel Hodgson's efforts to reboot Mystery Science Theater 3000, right? So he's raised a couple million.
I'm glad you
not really at all, in fact.
Okay. British people aside, so everyone in America is following this. So it's a TV show that was on long ago. He's raising a few million dollars via you know, Kickstarter to get it going again. Now, he could do that by going to a cable network, by going to a series of investors and going the traditional, you know, last 50 to 100 years route of getting a major company to back him to produce it, or he can divide that up into a larger group of people and crowdsource it. It's not really him begging to do it, because he could do the exact same thing by going to one or two people. But then again, I guess you can make the point, well, then he's just begging one or two people or companies. But if you make that point, isn't getting paid by a company just you going to someone and begging them to let you work for them to get paid? I mean, what's the difference?
I think not to overextend.
I mean, Giano begs GitHub to pay him his salary. I mean, really? I mean, is there any difference?
You know what? I think maybe part of the difference here, and again, I don't think it's about the tooling, it's just more about the approach. It seems to me that there is, let's look at two different examples. There is a difference in my mind between Brian, for example, saying, hey, I've got a cool project that I want to build. I want to create the Linux Sucks Deluxe DVD box set kind of thing, right?
Which is a great idea.
And then you basically reach out to your Patreons and you reach out to your pathetic audience and basically ask for support to fund that project.
You do realize the overlap between my audience and this show is fairly dramatic, right? Like,
okay. I'd like to apologize to our audience for that comment.
Well, specifically, John would like to apologize to the Bad Voltage audience that does not like Brian. That's the part he would like to apologize to right now.
We should maybe ship a survey. Anyway, but to me, even though that's one guy who is asking for money to support something that he would like to do, I think that's actually kind of different to somebody who says, for example, hi, I'd like to go to OSCON this year. Will you give me some money to help me go?
I don't see why. Brian said, I want to do this thing. I want to do a comic book about the adventures of Amiga OS or something.
Oh, right? That's such a good idea too. You guys are filled with good ideas today.
And then it's turning into a brainstorm.
And then someone else, the article in New York Times gives the example of a girl seeking $600 to go on a personal development journey. And both of those things, it's not clear what I get out of it, you know. I mean, yeah, you can make the case that in Brian's case, you'd be paying for the Amiga comic book.
Right.
You know, but in practice, what worries me about the tone of the article is it's very much these, like the sorts of discussions you get about public funding of the arts, where people look at it and reading out ridiculous sounding examples of artwork that a public museum has bought or something, in a kind of very, I'm down to earth, mock this kind of, why would anyone do an art piece, which is an unmade bed like Tracy Emin did? That's ridiculous. And there's this real kind of anti-intellectual kind of inverted snobbery thing going on there, where like, we get to judge artwork. It's like, art's what anyone thinks is art, you know. And this to me feels the same. Why shouldn't someone say, I could do with, if people give me $600, then I'd very much like to take a peyote filled trip into my own subconscious. That would be great. And then if people think that's a stupid idea, no one will give them the money. The problem is it overlaps with the charity stuff, where you've got people saying, please, I would like some money because my house was blown away in a tornado and now I haven't got a house, which I don't like, because I feel terribly guilty when I read these things, but no more so than I do if I'm walking through town and someone from Greenpeace stops me and hassles me to give them money because of dolphins. Right? It's just that's the way charities get money.
What do you and have against dolphins, dude? That was really harsh. Flipper's freaking adorable.
Yeah, he hates them on porpoise.
that was the worst joke ever. I love it.
You're welcome.
You're going to burn in hell for that joke. That was terrible.
So stupid. We've recorded that. That is forever now.
This is what happens.
Forever.
This is what happens when Jeremy's not here to keep us in check.
See, so. we are totally out of hand. Right.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, back to
that's
the...
That's
not even relevant. It's not even relevant.
It's tangentially related. That's why it's great.
That's awesome. So, back to the point. I think there is that kind of charity make you feel guilty edge. And, you know, I'm not suggesting that people are selling out to make you feel guilty. These are people who genuinely can't meet their medical expenses, or their beloved pet is about to die and they can't pay the vet, right? And they're like, what else can I do? I'll do this. Maybe I'll get the money. And if I don't, all I've lost is my dignity, which is cheaper than vet bills.
Do you guys remember the guy that was trying to make a potato salad? Do you guys remember that one?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so the potato salad guy. So, I mean, it started out kind of as really a joke, right? It was a begging joke for a potato salad, and it kind of turned into something cool. Like, it kind of evolved into this guy throwing these big potato salad parties, if I remember right, which is the most ridiculous thing in the world. But in and of itself is like a form of strange, bizarre performance art that I fully support. I mean, that's fantastic. And those sorts of things have made me so that when I see really, truly bizarre and ridiculous things pop up on Indiegogo and Kickstarter and the like, it makes me kind of want to jump on board just to see where it goes, to see what sort of wild ridiculousness humanity will take us in. So I guess the tone of the article, I agree with Stuart, was kind of crappy, and it was kind of like, hey, we hate art and we hate people and we hate people doing things. That's what I got out of the article, which, again, whatever. I didn't like the article, so I pretended to not have read it.
And I think the thing is, begging is clearly not the new economy, in answer to the question. And, you know, I think we all basically have the same viewpoint of live and let live.
Word, brother.
So, OnePlus, Chinese phone maker, have made a new phone, the OnePlus X. I have it. I asked various people about the company before I got the phone, and one thing was very, very clear. Dealing with OnePlus's customer support is about as pleasant as seeing blood on your toilet paper. Not one person had a good thing to say about it, which is normally only reserved for real icons of nerd hatred like Jeff Bezos or Ubuntu Unity. There are two sorts of people in the world, those who've been screwed by OnePlus's customer service, and those who haven't phoned them yet. On the other hand, my strength is as the strength of 10 men because my heart is pure, and so I bought the OnePlus X anyway, because it's gorgeous and it's 200 quid. It's a sweet phone. I won't go into detail about specs, because you can look that up on the internet if you want, and the sorts of terrible people who care about precisely which Snapdragon chip is in their phone will be pissed off by the rest of this review anyway. Firstly, the good. It's gorgeous. Fantastic industrial design. It's honestly a pleasure just holding it. An experience I'd hitherto only had with Krispy Kreme donuts and those massage chairs you get at airports. It's got a metal border, carefully milled lines, onyx backing, 3-position physical slider switch to turn notifications on and off. Good work, OnePlus industrial design team. It comes with a rather neat flat USB cable which coils up very tidily, and it comes with a screen protector built in, a thin jelly case in the box. Not that I use the jelly case, if I want a bouncy castle to put my phone in, I'd buy one at the fun fair. The screen is this whizzy OLED thing which can light up in a super power saving black and white mode, which it does to show you notifications while hardly using any battery. And it's dual SIM, or you can put in one SIM and one micro SD card, so it's expandable to more storage than I'll ever, ever need. All is not perfect, mind. OnePlus are still wedded to their terrible, terrible invite system. I get why they do it, but it's bloody galling to have to wait for permission to spend money on a thing you want, like having to take a numbered ticket and wait in line at a brothel. To claim an invite, you have to use their web account system, which is fucking shocking. Every time I look at it, I think my face might melt off like the hair flick bloke in Raiders of the Lost Ark. They sell two marks, the onyx back one, which I have, and a premium ceramic back for extra money. I'm generally in favour of this sort of thing. Make beautiful things, it's worth the money, screw the cheapskates. But every single review said you can't tell the difference between the standard black onyx back and the premium black ceramic back, apart from the $100 hole it puts in your wallet. I'm fine with the idea that rich people don't deserve their money anyway and they spend it on pointless shit that isn't worth it, but this is beyond a joke, OnePlus. The only way someone would know that you've got the premium ceramic back on your new X is you'd have to walk up to them and tell them, at which point you'd have a ceramic back phone and a broken nose for having been punched in the face being a rich, smug twat. It's not got USB-C, well, that's sort of a good thing because I've got a million USB cables and no USB-C cables, so I don't have to grovel around borrowing a cable to charge my phone like all the people with iPhones at conferences do. The OS is Oxygen OS, which is a fork of open source Android. OnePlus used to use Cyanogen, but then Cyanogen kicked them in the balls over India and so they made their own fork, so it doesn't have Marshmallow yet. And an incoming phone call is not seen as an important priority. So if you have the phone set to priority notifications only, and someone rings you, it'll show on the screen but not make any sound. Which is an idea so stupid, it's been enshrined in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. All of these wrong things make no difference because it's so lovely. Thank God someone's made it. The bad voltage verdict? If you're actually a decent human being and one of the few people who appreciate good industrial design but aren't lined up slavering with all the other sheep in Cupertino, then the OnePlus X is well-priced, sleek, more than featureful enough for you. If you're happy to have your whole life run out of an appalling plastic box the size of a tea tray and as relentlessly ugly as Rorschach after borrowing Marilyn Manson's makeup, then please fuck off back to Samsung and leave us in peace. 9 out of 10.
So, it sounds like overall you quite like it, right?
I love it to bits. I'm annoyed with a whole bunch of stuff about it, but I don't care because it's so lovely. It really is.
It's really a pile of crap, but man, I love the heck out of it just because it's so pretty. I love that.
Yeah, so, what's wrong with that as a policy? I like that.
You know what?
Policy.
Absolutely nothing's wrong with that, my friend. I say more power to you. If you like holding the damn thing and it makes you feel like a pretty pony, you rock with a bad self. You go out Gosh. There, you stick on that unicorn, you throw on that pink cape, and you just rock out.
That's what I'm doing.
Now, the one thing that weirds me out about phones like this is, like, I have a Nexus 6, and I used to have a Samsung Galaxy S5. And, that reminds me, I need to sort that thing out for you, Langridge. Because I gave it to him.
Yes.
Because I'm a great friend. I think we should acknowledge this on the show.
I did pay for it as well, you cheeky kid.
You didn't pay for it.
I did.
When did you pay for it?
When you bought a set of Lederhosen and paid €80 less than the cost of the Lederhosen for it.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah,
Lederhosen in exchange for Samsung Galaxy.
Wait, yeah. So Stuart traded a pair of Lederhosen for a Samsung Galaxy S5. Wait a minute. What's even more ridiculous, Jono, you gave away a perfectly good piece of hardware for a pair of Lederhosen. That is fantastic.
I got the best of that deal, you see. This is what happens when we go to bad voltage life.
Yeah, what actually happened was, I gave him the phone because he didn't have a phone, and he was like, I need a phone. I said, well, I got this thing lying around, gave it to him. And then I was a bit short buying the Lederhosen, and he gave me the money. And then he was like, give me some money. I was like, no, you got a free phone.
Yeah,
that's basically how it
was. We then had an argument about the definition of the word free, but it was about 2:30 in the morning in a bar in Munich. So I thought, fine, I paid for the phone then, no problem.
And Jeremy just looked on in despair.
He really did.
Poor Jeremy.
But yes, anyway, that... Completely to one side. I would still like the unlock code for it, please, Mr. Bacon. Yes.
I will sort that out this week. So the thing that weirds me out a little bit about phones like this, because it looks like a beautiful phone.
It
I think
really
you're right.
It does.
Gorgeous looking device. But the thing that with Android phones, I generally want to get as close to stock Android as I can. And I know this is a pretty irrational thought because my view is, you know, Google are doing the lion's share of the work in Android, and they're going to be shipping the releases. One of the things I like about the Nexus 6 is I got the Marshmallow update the other day.
Yeah.
So I'm getting the new stuff as it comes out. With the Samsung, for example, it took months and months and months before you got any major updates.
Yes.
And, but so this Oxygen OS thing, like, there's something about that that makes me feel weird.
I'm
like,
not massively...
I don't know why. I know it's completely irrational.
I'm not
hugely
happy with that myself. Oxygen OS is pretty close to stock Android, mainly because OnePlus don't have the resources to do something like TouchWiz. You know, I mean, Samsung built TouchWiz because they want to define the user experience and not have Google do it. Well, fine, whatever. You know, I think TouchWiz is a horrific, angry fruit salad of disaster and no one should ever use it, but whatever, that's a choice. But Oxygen OS was basically Cyanogen. I believe it's now sourced on the AOSP, the open source Android project. But that's fine with me. It's pretty close. They basically haven't changed very much at all, and I'm fine with that. If it did diverge a long way, I would be unhappy about it. And I am still unhappy that it's far enough away from stock Android that I don't have Marshmallow yet, and it's probably going to be next year sometime. But I think the distinction there is Samsung phones don't get upgrades to the newer version of Android immediately because they've made a whole bunch of changes, whereas OnePlus phones don't get upgrades immediately because they haven't made many changes, but they've only got like two people working on this.
It's a good excuse. Yeah. I mean, if you've got to have an excuse, it's a really valid one. But I mean, it still doesn't change the fact that you don't have the latest and greatest yet.
And that is annoying. This is one of those things where I'm sure there are people going, well, why don't you root it and install it? I was like, just shut up, man. Life's too short, for God's sake. And the only thing I really want out of Marshmallow anyway is the ability to restrict an app's permissions after it's been installed. And I can do that because that's in Oxygen.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it seems like would you say, I mean, look, you've used a bunch of Android phones over the year, would you say for the typical person listening to this show who is an Android fan and they're probably a heavy user of Android, they're not necessarily going to get to the point where they're going to be tweaking the hell out of it, but they're going to be installing a bunch of different apps, they're going to be using it in fairly heavy conditions, they're going to be, you know, using it a lot during the day, would you say that this is a good alternative to something like a Samsung phone?
I absolutely would. I value it, first of all, because it's not too big. Secondly, because it's pretty. And thirdly, because it's £200 and not £600.
That is a good price.
If those things are valuable to you, then you will find this to be a great phone. If what you want out of a phone is you're the sort of person who wants to root it, or worse, has a go at all their friends because they haven't rooted their phone, or you want an enormous stupid phone that you have to use with two hands, then this is not the phone for you. If having a beautiful thing is not important to you, then don't buy this. But if you want...
if you hate love and beauty, then you don't need this product.
But
are you such a jerk, Stuart? Jeez.
Are you marrying this phone?
Oh, I love it, man. Seriously.
It sounds like you have a, frankly, concerning level of affection for this device.
It's a genuinely nice choice. There are a whole bunch of annoying things wrong with it. I have to say, it's not the software is not perfect because there are little things wrong, but it's one of the few times that we've got something which is, you know, basically open source. It's Android, you can get it, you can work it yourself, all that kind of thing. The company deal with the community, they're not hidden up in some big ivory tower somewhere. And it's nice. People actually spending money on decent industrial design for stuff that we're allowed to buy is rare enough that it really ought to be applauded when it happens.
You're right. It should. And this it does look nice. I mean, if I was the kind of person that went out and bought a cell phone, this is actually one I would consider. This is a nice looking cell phone for a decent price.
Yeah,
it does look.
They do need to work
on.
They've come somewhere. Like the box it comes in is very nice. So you open up the box and the phone's there, nicely displayed, and everything's folded into it very neatly, and it's not difficult to open or anything. None of this sealed in plastic rubbish. But they clearly haven't thought the whole way through the customer experience, because I get the phone, playing with it, going, "Wow, this is lovely. I love this phone." Took a picture and it was all blurry. And I thought, oh, no, really? Is the camera knackered or something? That's no good. Anyway, worked out what it was. Doesn't matter. A couple of days later, I'm talking to a guy called Charles Marshall. Lives here in Birmingham.
What do you say it doesn't matter? Yeah. Was there a little piece of plastic stuck to the lens of the camera? Was that the thing that was wrong with?
And Charles had exactly the same problem, and he'd contacted OnePlus customer support, who had not got back to him because they're rubbish, as I believe I made very clear in the review. And I said to him, did you peel a bit of plastic off the back? And he went, there isn't a piece of plastic on the back. And I said, watch this, and then peeled the plastic off the back. And he went, oh, shit, look at that. And the only reason I knew was because I'd made exactly the same mistake. And you would think that if anyone at all at OnePlus had given this phone to someone who didn't work for the company and say, try the phone out, they'd have noticed that was the case and made the bit of plastic on the back transparent over the camera, or put a big sign on it saying, peel this off or something.
Or make it red or something.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, that reminds me of when I was a kid and we lived in this little village. My friend's dad was in the pub one time with my dad, and he was like, oh, I got to go to this bloody wedding. I'm really annoyed that I have to go to this wedding. I have to go and buy a suit and put like nice shoes on and everything. And he basically went and bought some shoes. And a couple of days later, they're in the pub again. And my dad was like, how was the wedding? He said, oh, it was awful. He said, my bloody feet were killing me all for the entire time. I got these shoes and my feet were in just absolute agony for the entire day. And he said, he was like, well, did you buy the right size? Yeah, I bought the right size. And he said, well, did you take the little piece of rolled up paper at the end of the shoe out before you put them on? No. Anyway.
I can say, very much the same kind of vibe, you know. So they still have things to work on in terms of that end-to-end customer experience. Like, when I was doing, you know, the initial setup wizard, when you first get an Android phone and turn on, it leads you through the your name, into your Google account stuff. There was a bit in that when I was setting up the Wi-Fi where it just hung there the whole time, and talking to another OnePlus X owner, Alan Pope, and he had exactly the same experience that I did. It hung at that point. But all you had to do was just sort of cancel it, and then that got set up anyway. So they've got something wrong there, and it needs to be fixed. And hopefully in later iterations, it will be fixed.
Well,
but again, none of these things are major deals, I don't think. They've still got a lot to work on, but it's nice to see a relatively new, relatively small company building products that tech people like that are pretty.
Before we wrap up, I would like to invite the Bad Voltage community to participate in a little fun task. Okay, so we've quite clearly highlighted in this review that Ack is really quite in love with this phone. Mm-hmm. So I think what I'd like to ask you to do is
wanted to do. Thank you, Jono.
I think it would be interesting maybe for our community to maybe create mock-ups, visual images of situations where Ack is in a romantic embrace with the phone, maybe walks on the beach, maybe laying in bed, maybe having a coffee together.
Getting married. I would like to see lots of pictures of Ack during the wedding and on the honeymoon, especially. I want to see honeymoon pictures.
And as a reward, as I mentioned, OnePlus do the sales through invites. So you can't buy one of the phones unless you've got an invite. So I got an invite, and that's why I bought the phone, because I applied for it on the website. But they also give purchasers invites that they can share to other people. And I have one of those. So if you... I assume my horrible ex-friends of presenters will judge the proposed entries.
Yes, we absolutely will.
And whichever they decide is the best, if you would like an invite to buy the OnePlus X, which I'm terribly in love with, then you win one.
Yes, and also we will tweet out your picture so everyone in the world can see it.
I'm not so sure about that.
There we go. Yeah. All right, let's wrap up this segment. Cut.
There's a court case going on where the US Department of Justice would like access to the information on a defendant's phone. Right?
Weird.
And this defendant has said, I can't unlock the phone, I've forgotten the passcode. Which we might decide is BS or not, but the US Department of Justice are apparently loath to push too hard to say, no, you have to unlock the phone because of the rights against self-incrimination under the Fifth Amendment to the US Constitution, where you don't have to give information that would incriminate yourself in a crime. And if the guy has done something, then presumably he wouldn't want to unlock the phone on that basis. So they have come up with a new wheeze. They've said, well, he doesn't actually own the software on his phone, because all software these days is just licensed. You don't buy the software, you buy a license to use it. Apple own the software. So Apple, we should be able to force them to unlock the phone for us. It's their software. They own it. Why?
Yeah.
Why can't we do that? Let's do that. Apple, you have to unlock the phone. Apple obviously said, hey, you know what you can do? Eat a bag of Dex. No way are we doing that. Get out of town. So it's currently going through the courts.
Was that an official press release? That
was, I was just going to ask that question. Yeah.
That was actually that, Tim Cook said that. But
that would be so phenomenal if Apple did come out and say that. If a company really did say, hey, eat a bag of dicks, I would forget every bad thing they've ever done and immediately buy all their products. That's all it takes.
So, agreed. On the one hand, it's tempting to just sit there in a big chair with a big bowl of popcorn and watch the massive Schadenfreude waterfall going on. Just go, ho, 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 as if I care. But actually, this is quite important. I mean, this is Apple taking a stand for user privacy, but equally, they're happy to take to have all the benefits of not having sold you the software, only having leased you it, which means they can just reach out and cut off your legal right to use it without basically any reason if they want to. They're happy to accept the benefits for that, but as soon as there's a deficit, they're like, no, it doesn't apply, it doesn't apply. What do we think should happen here? I mean, do you want the Department of Justice to win here? If they don't win, what effects do you think it might have?
This is another one of those things where I can see it from both perspectives, in the sense of, first of all, I don't like the idea that I'm buying a license.
No.
If I buy a product, I want to own that product and be able to tinker with it. As long as I'm not violating any laws and I'm not violating anybody else's copyrights, and I just don't want to be able to, this notion, like when you guys told me that, you know, you don't actually own an Amazon book on a Kindle, you own a license to read it. I don't like that.
No one likes that. That's crappy.
But the other thing as well is I have a certain amount of sympathy towards, we need to basically equip the authorities to be able to do the jobs effectively. But also, like, them doing that in a way that can be massively abused, I'm not okay with. So this is one of those things where I just don't know. It's like, I think it's really irritating when you hear that bad people got off on a technicality, or a technicality stopped them from being incarcerated in some way. But also, a sweeping set of powers to law enforcement is not necessarily the solution for that. So
two things to respond to your statements of massive disagreement from me here. First, everything's a technicality. Absolutely everything in relation to every law that exists within every country is a technicality. That's why they're laws. They're laws that are in place and people follow the laws. There aren't loopholes to the laws. There aren't technical, like little gotchas here and there. They're the laws. Might there be minutiae that are difficult to understand for a lot of people, or that were laws written weirdly so that there are lots of problems with laws? Sure. But there's no such thing as little funky technicalities. No, it's just the way it is. The second is, if you give any tool of any kind to any governmental power, it will be abused. It always has been that way. In every country that has ever existed since humans began, every single thing has been abused. I'm sure you can find an example of how water treatment laws and procedures have been abused. Everything gets abused. So I am hesitant to say that there's any sort of good reason whatsoever that I can think of at all to give the government the power to break open these phones. That seems redunculous to me. For so many reasons, they've already got sweeping dragnets of phone snooping in the United States going on, and they've admitted that it has never once, not once, solved or prevented anything. It hasn't prevented a single act of terrorism or violence or anything, and they've violated the privacy of millions upon millions, nay, hundreds of millions of people already. So what are we going to do? We're going to give them more power over phones? No, that's ridiculous. So as I hate to say I hope Apple wins on this one. And those words just are painful coming out of my mouth, but I do.
But pulling it back a little bit from the privacy topic, more specifically to the this notion of having a license. Like, what should Apple do in this situation? Like, what should companies do in this situation? Like, the classic example here is going to be Google, because basically you owe, like, you operate a Google, like, we basically live on Google services. And I think traditionally for a lot of companies, it's been if law enforcement has a subpoena for a reasonable subpoena, then they will comply. But outside of that, they're not going to respond to this. And I'm kind of like you, Brian. It's like, this doesn't sit right with me, you know?
It's interesting that you've got the whole licensing thing and you think, well, that means that the company can just reach out and stop you doing things with their software. But as it happens, they can't. The last time someone tried seriously was Autodesk. There was a chap called Werner who wanted to sell the copy of Autodesk that he'd bought. And Autodesk went, you can't do that. You're not allowed to sell it on to people. And he went, yeah, I am. I own it. And they went, ha, you know what? You don't own it. You only own a license to it. And that license is at our discretion. And we're taking it away from you if you try and sell the software on. And so he went to court and he won. And the judge said that, no, dude, it doesn't work like that. He bought that and he can sell it. So it's quite possible that all the bad things that you imagine might be the case, that are theoretically the case because you've only bought a license, actually fail the laugh test in front of real judges if you try taking people to court.
That would be
But there is still, I mean, yes, possibly a solution to this is you stop this whole business of end-user license agreements at all and you actually sell people software itself. But in practice, the whole entire industry has not done that and has no willingness to do that, and we're not going to get that overturned.
To be clear, if people would just use the Greater Lunduk license inspired by the adventures of Bill S. Prescott and Ted Theodore Logan, it explicitly states that if you purchase something licensed under that license, you own that and can then resell it and can do whatever the hell you want with it. If more people would just follow that divine wisdom, we'd be fine.
Nobody's
did you
using-
see, by the way, on a slight diversion, but did you see that someone wrote a license and uploaded it the other day somewhere on GitHub, I think it was, that it's basically the something like the anti-Stallman license, and it basically says anyone can use this software for any purposes whatsoever apart from Richard Stallman.
Which seems like that.
Remarkably cold towards Mr. Stallman, but it did get a chuckle.
Presumably, the Free Software Foundation have declared that this license is not GPL compatible and not free software because of restrictions in the field of use.
Well, actually, what's interesting is if it allows completely. What would happen if you had a free software license that deliberately didn't allow?
No restrictions on field of use. Debian Free Software Guidelines number 2, says this. You're not allowed to do that. It's not free software. It is terribly amusing, though.
I
don't know that there's necessarily a resolution to be had here. It's just, you know, like I say, grab the popcorn and a big chair and see how it plays out. Obviously, I think we'd all agree that we don't want the government to be able to do an end run around my privacy by just compelling the software vendor to do things. And I should point out that this is about an older version of iOS, because the current version, all the stuff is encrypted on the device. It's encrypted with per device keys, which means that Apple can't get around that. Which they've actually architected
those
iOS.
Sneaky bastards.
They've architected iOS quite well so that they can't be compelled to do this kind of thing. Even if a judge comes in and says, no, you have to do that, they go, well, we can't, sorry. It's all per device keys. Same reason that consoles have per console keys, which you have to work around. It makes it harder to pirate games and things like that. So the idea that companies are. In order to enforce proper privacy, they're learning that you not only have to protect your stuff from the government and from hackers, but from yourself. It feels to me like an interesting and good step in this field, right?
Well, the thing is, as well, is like if we look at the history of technology, whenever rules or policy is thrust onto people, people will always find a way around that. And yes, it will be like the kind of hacktivism kind of culture and the and technology people will kind of be the first to do that. But then eventually it will become more mainstream. I mean, the classic example of there, of course, it was around digital file sharing with Napster. Like, there was all kinds of efforts and policies to restrict what people can do. And then technology ultimately won out. And I suspect what's going to happen with this is, no matter what a government wants to do in terms of getting access to people's devices or access to people's content, people will find a way around it. And what will ultimately happen is you'll probably see more things like that thing, the black phone or whatever it was.
Yes.
That ultra kind of... Yeah. We're just going to start seeing more stuff like that, the more this percolates into people's consciousness.
That, to my mind, taking the rosy view, the brighter side of life view of this, maybe if this does convince more companies to think, well, we don't want to be compelled to provide this information, so we'll make sure that we can't. So in the same way that Mozilla, when they did sync, your data gets synced up to their servers, but it's encrypted and they can't read it. It's encrypted with a key from your device, from your phone or your desktop or whatever. Precisely so they can't be, even against their will, compelled to give your data away without your knowledge, because they go, well, we haven't got the keys. Nothing we can do about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, predictions. What do you guys think is going to happen with this? What do you think is going to be the ultimate, like, in 2 years, what do you think the outcome of this whole thing is going to be, in a sentence?
Something that's going to make me cranky.
You think you're going to be basically unhappy? Do you think the Department of Justice is going to win out on this? Okay.
I don't know that that's entirely true, but whatever's going to happen, whoever wins, it's not going to be good for me.
It's going to be annoying.
It's going to be annoying.
Mr. Lang, what do you think, the
Department of Justice are not going to win the case because the judge has already started saying, no, don't be ridiculous. Of course, you can't do that. This is a transparent attempt to get around the Fifth Amendment. This is like someone writes a confession which you can't bring into court because they're being incriminating themselves, and then you try and make the person who built the pen divulge what it wrote. Don't be ridiculous.
I think you're right. I think
this
approach is not going to work, and then they'll try another approach to make it work.
But like, I really do hope that more companies look at this and go the same way Apple have done with iOS and say, we need to make sure that this stuff is protected from everybody, not just... don't put yourself, the company, in some kind of magic privileged position, because then you become the weak point that the Department of Justice attacks.
Yeah, don't let the Department of Justice discover your Candy Crush saga high scores. This is unacceptable.
You know, there is one solution to this problem. We go full Thunderdome. And that brings us to the end of this week's Jeremy-free episode of Bad Voltage. I want to thank everyone for hanging out with us and remind you all, every single damned one of you, to get to Pasadena, freaking California, in January of this next coming year, which is like 2 months away, less than 2 months away, for the Southern California Linux Expo scale, because Bad Voltage Live is going to be happening there on Friday, January
22nd.
Right.
Yeah.
And it is going to
be great.
Pure insanity. It is going to be bonkers. We're going to be in the evening. So don't worry. If you go to the expo, you're not going to have to miss a bunch of other highly technical, extremely boring sessions in order to get to go to Bad Voltage Live. You get to do all of that. And then at the end of the day, unwind with these lovely individuals that you hear right now. Plus Jeremy. It is going to be so choice. It is going to blow your freaking minds off. So please do not hurt yourself by staying away from Pasadena, California. Go to Pasadena, California. Go. You know, you guys remember that Brendan Fraser movie Blast from the Past, where he's like stuck in a bunker underneath the city because his parents thought there was a nuclear war that was about to start, but then he comes up and nothing really bad was happening and he falls in love with Alicia Silverstone.
No. I stopped listening when you said Brendan Fraser.
Well, that took place in Pasadena, California, just like Bad Voltage Live does.
It's going to be amazing. And a couple of things to point out here that are very important. First of all, it's free entry. Like, you don't have to pay to get in. Everybody's welcome to come and join. Although we obviously encourage you to go to Scale, and there is a discount code, which is BVOLT. Where you can get, I think it's a 50% discount. Although the tickets are pretty cheap anyway, so...
Wait, are you saying people don't actually have to be scale attendees in order to go to Bad Voltage Live?
Correct.
Everyone is
correct.
Welcome.
Correct. But you should go to scale. I can't think why you'd go to Pasadena and not go to scale.
Scale is awesome. You have to go to scale.
So anyways, so that's the first point. The second point, there will be free beer, which is obviously a very good thing, and some other beverages as well for the non-drinkers.
Indeed.
And there's going to be a ton of prizes, and it's just going to be really fun. And then we're going to do it like we did the last couple of Live Voltages. We're going to do the show, and then afterwards we're going to have probably a bit of a gathering. We'll go and have some fun.
Well, if it's anything like last year, I'm pretty confident that you and Jeremy and Stuart will do really stupid things while drunk, while Brian watches, laughs, and goes to bed early while watching whatever episode of Game of Thrones is on HBO.
Yep. So if you want to be part of that,
you don't have to come out with us afterwards. Not drinking Horlicks and watching HBO in Brian's room.
I kind of liked that. I went to bed early and then I got up and I walked downstairs really late at night to use the Wi-Fi because the Wi-Fi in my room was bad. And I realized that all of you guys were still up and still drinking and you just moved between various rooms. But seriously.
So you can choose your own adventure. You can come and have fun, or you can join the Snuggle Bunnies Club and go and sit in Brian's.
To be clear, we're not looking at snuggling together here. This is just a mutual understanding that we would all like to go to bed early while watching Game of Thrones. That's kind of a pact we make as a people.
So yeah, that's it, really. We will have Jeremy back in the next show.
We will.
And also before we go on. Big thanks to Scale, the conference, for inviting us to come and do our show again. We really appreciate it. They're a wonderful group of people. But also a big thank you to our primary sponsor, which is Linode. You can go to linode.com, find out more about what they do. Wonderful company. Work. They're sponsoring the whole thing. And so definitely go and check them out. And if you can, send over a tweet to them and maybe say thank you. We want them to feel good about this. So, we'll have Jeremy back on the next show where we'll be back to ruin our arguments with facts.
I really enjoyed the fact that there was nobody with facts in this episode. That was kind of a nice change of pace for me. Like, I miss Jeremy, don't get me wrong, but I love the fact that I could spout off nonsense and no one corrected me. It was awesome.
it's brilliant. So,
I'm not necessarily sure we want this to continue forever or anything.
Perhaps not.
No, we like
hey Jono, could you please, for the love of God, stop talking so we can end this friggin' show.